In 1961, Billy Bray, a local kid in Wilsall, Montana, found a large biface and what he called knuckle bones covered in red stuff on a rodent back dirt pile from the Anzick property. 7 years later, in spring 1968, Mel and Helen Anzick gave permission to Calvin Sarver and Ben Hargis to remove material from their property. What they unearthed and what was learned from their find was historic and upended previous thinking in archaeology and anthropology of the Americas. In this Wanderlust lecture, given at the Belgrade Community Library on September 6, 2018, archaeologist Dr. Larry Laren talks about his career from when he was a young grad student digging at such sites, as well as founding one of the first professional cultural resource consulting firms. He addresses such questions as, where do inhabitants of North America come from historically? How did they survive? Did they foment the extinction of woolly mammoths by their innovative stone technology and prowess?
Welcome to this evening's Wanderlust presentation, A Clovis Burial in Park County, Montana. Wanderlust presentations at the Belgrade Library are free and open to the public thanks to a generous sponsorship by the First Interstate Bank. My name is Sarah Creech. I'm the Adult Services Coordinator here at the Belgrade Library. Tonight's presenter, Dr. Larry Laren, is a Park County native who has been conducting archaeological research in Montana since 1966. He has bachelor and master's degrees from Montana State University and a PhD in North American archaeology from the University of Calgary. He has taught at Montana State College, Mount Royal College, the University of Calgary, and Eastern Montana College. Since 1971, he has been operating Anthro Research Incorporated, a private consulting firm. His book, Homeland, An Archaeologist's View of Yellowstone Country's Past, was published in 2006. And in 2013, he received the Governor's Award for the Humanities. So please help me welcome Dr. Laren. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being invited here. I was originally invited by Kylie McGregor. Her father, Dan McGregor, is a friend of mine, and she asked about maybe doing a program in archaeology or anthropology for the library here. So what I'm going to present tonight is basically kind of a career overview of how I got started in archaeology, what archaeology is. When I started, it was an academic discipline based on research. It's a soft science. And then in the 70s, some laws changed, and what we called archaeology became cultural resource management. So in that regard, I'm not sure what that is, but I know what I started out to do, and what I'm going to show you here, first of all, is how I started in my career, some of the things that have happened, and then I'm going to talk specifically about Clovis Age Burial. That's about 29 miles east of here. It's the crow flies near Wilsall, Montana. And then I'm going to go into kind of some academic stuff about some experiments we did with stone tools. So it's kind of a broad cross-section of things. But the main focus is the Anzick site near Wilsall, Montana. So what is archaeology? This is Tim Cahill, you may know, as an outdoor writer. And this in a bourbon-laced discussion one night in the Owl Lounge in Livingston, he told me that archaeologists are argumentative, it's minutia, we're bellicose about our petty theories, and we're into this whole noble savage Garden of Eden thing. So we'll see if Tim is right. Okay, when I started in archaeology, I mentioned that it was a research-oriented, pretty much academic and museum type of endeavor. And right about in its middle 70s, certain laws required archaeology and cultural resource studies, historical studies for environmental impact statements and other needs. So my career then shifted from pure academia, where if I would have stayed in a research capacity, I'd have had to stay with a university or a museum. But after going through a PhD program, I knew I was not going to be an academic. So I started my own consulting firm. It's actually the first private firm in North America while I was still a graduate student. So some of the projects I have worked on are on the pipelines, local schools, different tours, and different people I've worked through. And this slide basically illustrates some of the newspaper clippings from different projects that I've worked on through the course of my career. During the course of my career, I started out excavating a site near Livingston named the Myers-Hindman site after the landowners George and Five Myers and Rose and Don Hindman. And that particular site was what we call a stratified site. And it went back to 9,500 years at that second to the bottom level there. And we ran into water there, but below that would be 9,000 and 11,000 years. So by taking the material from the Anzac site, which dates 11,000 years, that I'll explain in more detail here, by looking at this soil profile, you can see the change through time of the different projectile points and what we call cultures through time. So basically, we have for this area, which includes southwestern, all of Montana, in fact, and northwestern plains, a relatively continuous sequence of human occupation for 11,000 years. The Shoshone are the earliest people that we can identify in this area based on linguistic data and some of their artifacts, specifically their pottery type. So tonight I'm going to specifically talk about Clovis. This illustration shows a Clovis point on the left, and where the name came from was from the Blackwater Draw site near Clovis, New Mexico, which was found in the early 1930s. Clovis is the earliest fully accepted and documented archaeological culture in North America. Consistently dates about 11,000 radiocarbon years before present. We don't have much information on these people during this age, in this time period, the Clovis period. When I talk about the Anzac site at Wilsall, it will give you an example of what these people lived like and what they left. But right now, in the absence of the Anzac site, which was found in 1968, this would be the extent of our knowledge about these Paleo-Indian cultures in this area from 10 to 11,000 years ago. This projectile point on the left is the base of an obsidian Clovis point, which was found when they were excavating the footings for the Gardner Post Office. So that means that obsidian cliff was used 11,000 years ago. These other two surface finds are from the Upper Yellowstone Valley. They are Clovis points, and then the one on the right is a broken Folsom point, which is about 1,000 years younger than the Clovis point, but I'll explain some of that in more detail. The Clovis culture, the first culture that we can identify in this area, these people entered this area at the end of the last ice age, or the Pinedale Glaciation. This is looking at the Upper Yellowstone Valley, if you know where Dome Mountain is, and Yankee Jim Canyon. At this Pinedale Glaciation was that thick and advanced off the Yellowstone Plateau. But the glaciers had receded by at least probably 14,000 years ago. So during this time period is the first evidence where we have of prehistoric peoples here, and we find their artifacts associated with now extinct mammoth remains. That, as I mentioned, was the Blackwater Draw site, was one of the first sites where these projectile points, these spear points, or whatever type of point they were, were found associated with mammoth remains. And I'm going to talk in more detail. This artist's portrayal of killing a mammoth is really probably not accurate. If any of you have ever hunted and you know what it takes to penetrate an elephant or a woolly mammoth, this is definitely almost a cartoon. Same as this dramatic scene of trying to kill a mammoth. You had to be that close, but a very, again, dramatized kind of a situation. So basically we're dealing with hunters and we're dealing with hunting cultures, but they're hunters and gatherers, and this hunting image gets too far expanded to where it becomes probably not viable, and some archaeologists believe that these people were such efficient hunters that they actually brought about the extinction of the mammoth. And I would say that is not correct, because there were a lot of other species that died out at the same time that were hunted by prehistoric people. So I'm trying to get away from some of the drama and the myth. I would say one thing about archaeology, we're still trying to answer the same questions we were when I started 50 years ago. So the Anzac site, named after the landowner, Mel Anzac, about a mile south of Wilsall, Montana, was found in May of 1968. This picture shows you where the site is located and how well watered it is and in this intermountain basin. So Benny Hargis and Calvin Sarbert, well, first of all, Billy Bray, a local kid in Wilsall in 1961, was hunting woodchucks on around the site there in a rock outcrop. And he came upon a large stone bifacer tool all covered with red iron oxide and what he called knuckle bones. Well, these knuckle bones were the bones of an infant, and they'd worked out of this badger or woodchuck hole that was where he was hunting. That was 1961. 1968, Ben Hargis and Calvin Sarver are procuring fill materials for the drain field for the Wilsall School. And what they were looking for was talus, that weathered off talus from this rock outcrop to use in a drain field, because you put it in there with straw and loose rock for your drain field. So they were basically loading talus into a dump truck, and out of this dump truck pulled out, and Benny Hargis was going to take a little bit of this gray powder material that I'll discuss and dump it in a hole in the road. Well, when he did, another one of these large bifaces that you'll see fell out of the bucket of the truck. So they quit excavating there that day and moved over to another location at the site. That evening, they got their wives and their shovels, and they went back and they started digging, and they started pulling these large bifaces that you'll see out of this pit that was in the side of this gray powder material. Well, they pulled out over 100 artifacts and antler materials, all contained in about 1 meter. And when they got to the bottom, they found these human skeletal remains of a small child. So I went up in May of 1968. I met with Ben Hargis and Calvin Sarver at the invitation of Jeff Skelman at their house. And they came in with bucket loads of these artifacts that they had found in an axe he had washed the red ochre off from. And the story is in this book, Homeland, up till 2006. History of the site up to 2006 is contained in our book, Homeland. So the Anzac site, then, and I'll say this again, based on what, it's not a cache. People miss a cache. It's something that you leave and go back to for future use. It was a burial, had 115 red ochre iron oxide covered stone, bone, and antler grave goods in association with a 2-year-old child. Consistently dated at 11,000 radiocarbon years before present. It's the largest and most complete assemblage of Clovis artifacts in the Western Hemisphere, and it represents the earliest culturally affiliated remains and the earliest evidence of religion in the Western Hemisphere. And again, it's 29 miles from here. So this is the location of the site. You probably have heard some of these theories about people coming down the West Coast and coming across the Atlantic, but I'm still going to stay with the same theory that I had as a graduate student. They came down between these ice sheets after they had retracted. And when they got across the Missouri River, it's hunters and gatherers at this time, they ran into some of the best lithic quarries, stone quarries for making stone tools that were available. And they are contained in the Smith River White Sulfur area. And I believe that's one of the reasons that they lived in this area, buried their dead here, and manufactured their stone tools. At that time, 11,000 years ago, the Shields Valley, this area here, was inhabited by animals and critters like this, from mammoth, bison, dire wolf, horse, and camel. So in looking at the Paleo-Indian sequence for Montana and the different life forms up on the top going down to the modern forms. These are the sites and the type of cultures that lived here. The cultures are named generally after the distinctive projectile point that is found at this time level. So we have Anzac at 11,000, a culture named Goshen, and then Folsom, which is actually the Folsom site, which I'll explain here later, was the first earliest evidence that was accepted of early man with now extinct bison. But anyway, this is a projectile point sequence from 11,000 to about 8,000 years ago for this area. There's also a mammoth was found about 15 miles south of Wilsall near Chadburn, and this mammoth was found on Park County rancher Ben Stein's place. We test excavated it. It's in the bottom of this slope here, down where the red arrow is. But what this illustrates is that if you're going to find Clovis materials, they're either going to be really deep or they're going to be washed away. So we dug down through those deposits. We came in from the creek, and we're on this mammoth bone bed here that had charcoal in it, but we did not find any stone tools. But I would conclude that this surface here and this evidence is definitely related to the people from the Anzac site. So the Anzac site, a lot of controversy. This is Flathead Creek on the left. People said, well, how could it be there? It's so close to the floodplain. But it was in this rock outcrop, as you see in the picture here. And this is looking at the Anzac site, again, from the north in the rock outcrop. But this picture is taken after the materials had been moved by the people for the school. But if you ever have studied any Indian ethnography and the way that people refer to things, if you look to the south, that high hill, that's the highest point in the Shields Valley floor. But that, to me, represents a mammoth with that hump. And that's what brought these people in here, was that image, that landscape image, and that kind of a stretch of the imagination. But at the base of that cliff, this is Bill Bray. This is a biface he found in 1961. But biface is just simply a tool that's flaked or chipped on both faces. This is Ben Hargis. He's the guy that found the site. And his description, as he says here in this slide, is it was all in one area, that gray gunpowder-like stuff. They were on top of each other. As we pulled one out, we could hear a clink as one dropped onto the other one. They were all covered with that red stuff, and we were up to our elbows washing it off. Not good. But these people should not be discounted, because they didn't know what they found and they didn't know who to turn to, and unfortunately they didn't take any pictures. This is Stan Wilmoth, state archaeologist, in this photo here looking at this gray gunpowder type stuff. What preserved the Anzac burial for 11,000 years was these people dug into what would be called bentonite, near bentonite, this gray clay facies change in this sandstone, and they dug into that. And then it sloughed over with talus, and it stayed dry, and it stayed relatively undisturbed by rodents. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the preservation of the what we're calling foreshafts and the skeletal remains. So this is what it looked like. This is another location on Mission Creek Road, but this is what I would suggest the Anzac site looked like when Ben Hargis and Calvin Sarber found it. It was sloughed down in this gray powder zone. They started at the bottom pulling this talus off, and then they hit the burial pit. This is a reconstruction of what the site probably looked like 11,000 years ago. So here are some of the artifacts from the Anzac site, just to show you the magnitude and the size that they are impressive. Some people thought that they're ceremonial because they're so big, but this is actually the kind of toolkit that you ideally would start out with as a Clovis hunter. And again, there were over 100, 115 stone and antler artifacts in the site. So they found the classic Clovis-type points, as illustrated here on the left in the site. That's the site with the long flake that you saw in the middle. We also found these antler foreshafts, and then a number of these bifaces. What we think happened is you were using these bifaces these large knives for butchering, and when they got too dull and too small, you would just make them into a projectile point or a Clovis point. So you're kind of recycling your materials. Again, a very religious site, a lot of shamanism involved here, a lot of red ochre, which involves ceremonialism. And everything fits with the Upper Paleolithic in Central Europe at the same time, in terms of, except later, this stuff occurs in Europe and stuff about 20,000 years ago, child burials. So in 2000, I worked with Smithsonian archaeologists, and we were still had questions about the context, whether or not the human skeletal remains were associated with the artifact materials, and Doug Owsley from Smithsonian, Dave Hunt came out and worked up the data and got some dates and presented this article. So that pretty much authenticated the site in 2001. So again, to sum up on this slide, the Anzac site is not a cache. It's a Clovis burial. It's 11,000 years old. Earliest, largest assemblage in North America and earliest evidence of religion. So now, minutia. Well, there's just a lot of armchair people that haven't hunted or haven't been in field conditions that draw conclusions about hunting. And I showed you the illustration of those supposed mammoth kills. There's one thing for sure. If you're going to kill a mammoth, a bison, or any larger animal with a stone tip projectile point, you're going to have to be within about 25 yards. So the atlatl or handheld is probably one of the first items that was used. This is a throwing board atlatl to give pressure and distance. A handheld spear, as you saw in the depiction, and then these persisted with the introduction, supposedly, of the bow and arrow about the time of Christ, and eventually replaced by the modern firearms. So the first evidence that was accepted was of early man in association with now extinct life forms is at Folsom, New Mexico. This is a Folsom projectile point here that was found in 1927. And it was this find that everyone accepted that people were here 10,000 years ago, which is, this culture is about 1,000 years younger than the Clovis culture. So this is the evidence that was accepted, because it was found what's called in situ or in context. And all the leading archaeologists at that time verified it. So now we go to Clovis projectile points, and the theory is, this minutia theory, is that the bow and arrow came in about the time of Christ, and before that people used the atlatl, and that you could go by the size, and the smaller a point is, the more likely it is to be an arrow point rather than a atlatl or spear point. And you probably heard the myth in these bison kills where they had these bird points, these little tiny points, to kill birds. The only problem is that all those little tiny points are found in the rib cage of the bison. But this illustration, here's two Clovis points right here, one from Blackwater Draw and one from the Anzac site, to show you the range of variation in these projectile points. So this became a study that I conducted with some of my colleagues. What size projectile point, how big does a projectile point have to be effective? These Clovis points are from the Laner site in Arizona, and you can see again the range and variation down to both spear points, atlatl points in the same site. So we halved it up with some projectile points, some arrow points, typical of bow and arrow points, but we also took a, if size was the issue, big means atlatl and mammoth, then why could you take an arrow shaft? Again, this is minutia for a lot of people. Take an arrow shaft, the size of a shaft for a small arrowhead, and put it on one of these large Clovis points. So that's what we did, and this elk was killed with this projectile point on an arrow shaft. So the point is that there's a lot of variation in size. So then we went one step farther. We worked with Roy Alt, a flintknapper, and we made up a series of these early large projectile points and mounted them all on arrow shafts and used the bow and arrow to project them. So this is our test. So what we were able to demonstrate, that their size is probably not a variable, but going back to the original Folsom find by the ribs, and then this shot here of the penetration of the rib of the bison with the projectile points that we were using. So this is what these projectile points look like after they were used at broken shafts, which gave us some information, but the biggest conclusion we made was that size doesn't matter, that you can have a large projectile point on a narrow shaft. So that, I guess, qualifies as minutia. Also found in the site were these four shafts, what I called four shafts at the time. This is a site that with a mammoth leg bone with one of these four shafts in association with it. This is actually the way it was found in the site. So it was right in this area here on the animal. Basically, eight projectile points and eight four shafts in the Anzac burial. And this is what these, what we're calling four shafts, looked like. So I wrote up an article with Rob Bonnickson, and we projected some ideas about how these four shafts would have worked as a detachable item that you could have a spear with an insert. You could stick a mammoth, pull it out, you'd have your main shaft, and you could reload. So it would be a reloading kind of system because these four shafts are found right in association with a mammoth. So to further on that experiment, then Bill McConnell, friend of mine, went out and made the four-shaft composite like this and then projected it with a regular longbow and was able to show that, this technique worked. So that is what I wanted to present tonight, basically an overview of 11,000 years of prehistory, significant find of the Anzac site near Wilsall and how that's changed a lot of our theories. If we hadn't found the Anzac site, if it hadn't been discovered, we still would know very little bit about Clovis, but again, this is a burial and a very significant assemblage because it represents what the people started with, not what was left in their campsite or left after a kill site. Okay, I guess that wraps up the presentation. That was kind of a whirlwind thing, but I guess you do know the importance of the Anzac site and the other sites that are in this area. We do have 11,000 years of continuous occupation in this area, and we still have a lot of questions to answer, and I think as more research goes on, we probably will answer some of them.
I know this might not be your area of study. I think the bones were gone for, 40 years or something, and then
resurfaced a couple years ago, correct? The skeletal remains? Were stolen by a former professor that gave them to his son, and they were in his possession, and they went to New Mexico, and then they finally came back to the Anzacs, yes. Yeah, and then they returned to the Anzacs, and then there was a burial law passed in 2001, and part of it went through and part of it didn't. I would say it's kind of an irony. After 40 years of protecting and interpreting the Anzac site, I ended up being banned from the site to this day, because I wouldn't lie and I wouldn't break the law. But that's another story. Okay. May of 68 is when Ben and Calvin found it. National Geographic came out in, I think that was 73 or so. It just another twist to this interesting story. Ben Hargis, the finder, was waiting for the National Geographic to show up that day, and I was to meet him up there. And unfortunately, the night before, he was working in his sawmill and ran into the blade and killed it as he was killed the day before National Geographic showed up. But yeah, just there are a lot of these little things that happened like that throughout the course of the site. But right now, the artifacts are at the Montana Historical Society in Helena. You will be able to view, well, actually, they're grave goods, but they are on loan to the Montana Historical Society. And there was a lot lost if it would have been, you know, we would have had competent archaeologists start on it, but the Red Ochre Association, part of the problem is that after they found it and they hit the human skeletal remains, they got spooked and they took their front end loader and dumped dirt back over it. So, you know, you take a site of this magnitude, nothing like it's ever been found before, and then you put the hex of association and amateurs on it. I spent most of my career trying to demonstrate the context and the association. In archaeology, you have to connect a lot of dots, some of which you never connect. But the oral testimony of the finders in going back independently, we took all three of the finders back independently and asked them where it was found, and they all three verified where it was at. But yes, it did put a death hex on it. It's not an active research area anyway. They cared about their kids and the next afterlife, yeah. I mean, all children are special in all cultures. Yeah, I know what you're saying, but you know, you want to hear this myth about, well, he was a chief's son or whatever. He was a child that was in the hunting culture, and that's the way they felt about him. And the thing is that there are parallels in Europe with the same thing of these child burials with all kinds of extensive remains. So it's a belief in the afterlife, but what's really good about the Anzac site is this is all the stuff that they thought you needed in the afterlife. This is a complete assemblage, and the quarries for this stuff, these 100 and some artifacts, are within a range of about 250 miles, but a lot of them are like within 50 miles of the site up near Moss Agate Springs and the Smith River area, where all these cherts and flints occur. It was in about 2013 or so that the DNA was tested on it and confirmed at that time, yes. Benny and Calvin also, when they were poking around, found a human parietal up in that rock slide that was about 8,500 years, so I think there's more than one person buried in there. I think that pattern went through time. You want the results or the politics? The results were that this demonstrated that Native Americans are, the current Native Americans are related to people in the old world, that this connection is there. And if you remember all the problems with the Kennewick issue and who owned them and what the genetics were, this pretty much resolved the Kennewick problem, which shouldn't have been a problem in the first place. But DNA tests were conducted in Denmark, and those are the results, yes.
Well, from my understanding of it, DNA testing is because of the Grave and Repatriation Act. They did not want the DNA done. That's sacred. Their bones, they did not want them shaved. They did not want them tested in the United States. Sarah Anzac is a geneticist. She got her bones back. She smuggled them to Denmark. They did the testing. And somehow she smused the Native American tribe, so now it's all okay. And they reburied the baby, the boy, the child. But I don't know
the boy. As far as we know, it was reburied.
Yeah. There
was no inventory of what was out and what was in. Yes, she has the story correct. I mean, this is part of the reason I was banned from the site because of the way it went. There was supposed to be tribal consultation. It was a long story. And you know, as you get older and mature to full blossom, you don't want to be too bitter and have too many regrets. A lot of this stuff is just the way it is. It's a consulting business. Well, I'll give you, for example, let's see, with a couple of the most current projects. We did a project in Idaho for Premium Exploration. They needed to get a number of drill sites for their core drilling exploration for gold mining done on federal land. So we go in first and see if there's anything of historical significance. We worked for the Stillwater Mining Company for about 30 years on their environmental impact statements so that they could comply with the State Historic Preservation Office and the federal agencies. So that's basically what we've been involved in. Also involved in county road research, served a 4-year term as a county commissioner, and I learned about roads and their origin, and then also I applied the archaeological method of seeing where they were out on the landscape. So sometimes we get involved in looking where historic roads were and determining whether or not they're still county roads or if they've been abandoned or where they're at. So basically, it's a compliance kind of a discipline. Transmission lines, pipelines, dams, sometimes subdivisions, things like that. You know. I mean, there's quite a few firms out there now that do it, but it happened. It just exploded in the 70s, and with the Moss-Benedict bill, it became the Archaeological Preservation Act. My favorite find? I guess the site I did my dissertation on, the Myers-Heinemann site, because it had a layer cake sequence, and we go so far and we'd find more, and we got down like 9 and 10 feet deep and kept finding artifacts, and just to see that continuity through time, that was, and then using that for the basis of my doctoral dissertation and getting carbon dates on all those levels, and that kind of is the one that sticks with me the most. Yes, I would mention I just had an article published in the Montana Quarterly about how the Crazy Mountains got their name. So if you're interested, you might look at the latest issue of the Montana Quarterly. I'm working with the Crazy Mountain Museum in Big Timber right now, and we're in the process of transferring all my research data to the Crazy Mountain Museum in Big Timber and reworking their displays and materials down there. I see Kylie back there smiling, Kylie McGregor. Her dad is a friend of mine. That's how we got this connection. I might add, I learned all my bad habits from her dad. Okay, well, thank you.